once again, the Success Is My Religion podcast is partnering with the HBCU Experience Movement. We are interviewing the co-authors of the North Carolina A&T State University's third edition book that is coming out soon. I hope you enjoyed these episodes. Let me tell you a little bit about my man, Nathan Kemp. Nathan Alexander Kemp is a third generation graduate of North Carolina Agriculture and Technical State University, where he earned his Bachelor's of Arts degree in history. As a leader, educator, and lifelong student, Nathan has always sought opportunities that would allow him to not only lead and showcase his talents, but to engage and inspire others to do the same. It is his personal goal to uplift, empower, and guide young men and women to live a better spiritual, academic, and social life, encouraging them to keep the faith, seek wise counsel, and trust that there is a great purpose for their life. Professionally, Nathan has gained experience in branding, marketing, and business development throughout his professional career. He has been afforded the opportunity to work in several industries, from higher education, finance, healthcare, business, and economic development, and now transportation. Nathan's occupational experience includes serving as a strategic business associate for the North Carolina Department of Transportation, policy liaison for governance and planning economic development initiatives in Eastern North Carolina with the North Carolina Global Transpark. Currently, Nathan is a public engagement specialist at Go Triangle and resides in Raleigh, North Carolina. As a public engagement specialist, Nathan's job requires community involvement and stakeholder relationships to increase access and awareness of public transportation to underrepresented communities. This is achieved by working with elected officials, nonprofit agencies, religious organizations, and educational institutions. Nathan is co-owner of the Alexander G. Events, a full-service event planning business in Greensboro, North Carolina. He also operates Langston Hearst Interior Designs, as well as the Uncle Nate Says podcast, formerly Nate and Friends, that focuses on politics, pop culture, religion, and issues that affect the African American community. Nathan is a certified Lean Six Sigma Green Belt and a member of the Phi Beta Sigma Fraternity Incorporated. He is currently pursuing a master's degree in public administration. I hope y'all enjoyed this episode. It is great. Let us know what you think. Welcome to another episode of the Success Is My Religion podcast. We had to redo this interview because we was getting cut out too bad and y'all wouldn't have been able to hear it. And Nathan is back. Hey. And we can hear him loud and clear. He's gonna drop you with these gems and tell you about his HBCU experience. So Nathan, tell everybody your name, a little bit about you, and just start going into your HBCU experience at the illustrious,
yes sir,
is illustrious North Carolina A&T State University. The HBCU experience book is out today.
Yes.
We are recording this today, and the book is out. Hopefully you guys become a bestseller. Another bestseller. So Nathan, let's get right into it.
Yeah, I appreciate you for having me back. Thank you. Yeah, my name is Nathan Alexander Kemp. I am a third generation graduate of the North Carolina Agricultural and Technical State University, where I received my degree in history. I grew up in Greensboro, North Carolina, born and raised, and I currently reside in Raleigh, North Carolina, where I serve as a public engagement specialist with the Regional Transit Authority. You know, being a part of this book has been really almost a dream come true. It's kind of funny how you write down goals and, you know, sometimes you're not really specific on the goal, or you might be specific, but God has a different, you know, way that he wants it to look. And so, you know, one of my goals before turning 30 was to actually write a book. And I just thought about how good God is, in that, you know, I it may not be that I wrote an entire book, but here I am, and I can now say, you know, published author to, you know, all else that I've done. And so this has been a great time, and I'm really enjoying it. I'm very glad that the book is out today, you know, available for purchase on Amazon. As far as my experience at my HBCU, man, it was at times it can be indescribable, because A&T is such a special and unique place. You know, I know that there are, and I'm sure everyone at every HBCU probably would say the same thing, that their school was very special and unique. But A&T truly is special and unique, not just because of the legacy that I hold at A&T, but because of my experiences at A&T from childhood all the way up into present day. You know, while I was there, I was fortunate enough to be a part of a very prestigious group, you know, that, you know, a lot of people really strive for, which you know, is known as the Student Government Association. You know, they are the governing student body on campus, and it is a, they're highly coveted positions, and I had the fortune to work with them for 4 years. Started out as an intern and then eventually moved to a paid student assistant position, mm-hmm. Working for student activities. But my experience at A&T, you know, was rooted in tradition, it's rooted in family, rooted in love, friendship, and, you know, I can also add growth to that. You know, I can definitely tell you that there is something happens to you when you attend an HBCU. It's like you become much more magical, if you will, and you just grow up, and, you know, life begins to happen, and you go through, you know, your time at school, and then you graduate, and then you get into the workforce, and you realize that all of the things that you learned at your HBCU is directly impacting and helping you in your current situation. And so all of that takes into account in your experience, and it makes for a really great one.
Man, you said you're third generation?
Third generation.
What was that like? Because, like, I'm the one in my family starting all of the traditions, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Like I don't know the feeling of, oh, this is what I'm gonna do. Like, this is an opportunity for me because so and so had an experience that I can look off of. Mm-hmm. And like I can touch that person and be like, what happened there? And then I can kind of guide myself through like what's going to happen with me. You know, I can have a similar experience, and if it was good, they turned out good. And turned out to do good things in their lives to move the family forward. I don't have that. So kind of explain like what was that like, that process? You know, did you know you was going to A&T from the get-go? It was like everybody went here.
So I always knew, you know, A&T was going to be my choice. A&T, you know, was what was preached, you know, my entire life. My you know, started with my grandfather, who is a three-time graduate from A&T, classes of 58, 65, and 77. And, you know, then that father's oldest brother, my father, and then I have then my generation, my oldest first cousin, and then myself and my sister and another cousin that attended, and a whole bunch of other cousins and aunts and uncles that, you know, went as well. I did apply to other schools, but I just knew, you know, A&T was going to be the choice. I just wanted to do it just to see, you know, what others would say. And it's really kind of funny because I applied to A&T, North Carolina Central, UNC Charlotte, Shaw University, and Johnson C. Smith all at the same time. And A&T was the first school that got back to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I had received a decision from A&T. I applied in November timeframe, something like that. And then my decision I got in January. And it was just kind of like, okay. And I sent my paperwork in, you know, that's who I was going to go with, you know, and it did help that, you know, I did have, you know, my father and grandfather saying, you're going to A&T like your grandfather, right? So, you know, you have that. And there was one moment, and it was more so in jest, but it's still kind of funny. But so, you know, A&T graduates run, you know, deep in my family, but also in my immediate family on my father's side, Fayetteville State University comes up quite a bit as well. And so one night we were at my grandparents' house, and it was before I started school, and they were like, my grandfather said, all right, now grandson, you got one or two choices. Either you got A&T or Fayetteville State. Which one you going to?
Or what? Or who state?
Fayetteville State University.
Okay.
Yeah. He's like, which one you going to? Well, I knew I wasn't coming to Fayetteville, so I was like, okay, it's A&T. But I knew it was, it even aside from that, there was no pressure. It was where I wanted to go, what I wanted to be a part of. And so, yeah. And as for being a legacy at the university, you know, oftentimes when you go into a situation where you have family members that have, you know, gone before you and have walked the same halls and, you know, been in the same classrooms and, you know, walked those same streets as you, it can be kind of intimidating going into that situation, knowing that they have been able to, you know, go through this school and then become successful. And knowing what this school contributed to their success, like I said, it can become kind of intimidating. And that's what the title of my chapter actually refers to, which is Finding My Own Aggie Pride. And it's speaking on how I came in knowing the history of my family at the university, but still created my own, charted my own path.
And didn't you say there's a like a definition to the Aggie pride chant or something?
Yeah. So when
tell us about that.
When I started A&T, there was this thing called the Aggie Pride Compact that they had us to learn. And what it stands for is Aggie Pride, achieving great goals in everything, producing renowned individuals dedicated to excellence. Aggie Pride. And it's, you know, that particular phrase is something that, you know, I took on personally and continue to try to, you know, make sure that I am being excellent in whatever it is that I'm doing.
Man, I told you was gonna drop them gems today. That's dope because I love acronyms, and like my philosophy for individual achievement that I created is an acronym. And every time I hear other people or other acronyms like that, it makes me like, I'm proud that like I created something that could actually like
be meaningful to someone.
Because that's interesting, just the play on words and mm-hmm. how understand the definitions of words and how they come together and give us a sense of resilience, and it can really mean something deeper than what just the words that AccuPride says, you know.
Yes, most definitely.
So tell us about your first year at A&T.
My first year, it was great. Every year was great. Let me say that. Yeah. It was great. You know what? I there were a lot of experiences, a lot of firsts. In particular, you know, homecomings typically they rotate or they change every year, but they're usually in the same month. My freshman year homecoming actually fell that week fell on my birthday.
Oh, okay.
So I turned 18 my first homecoming.
Nice.
That Wednesday of the which was the comedy show, and Bruce was the headliner that
night. Bruce, let Bruce hit it.
Right. And so like freshman year was great, and that's when that's when I got involved with SGA, was first semester of my freshman year. It was great. And, you know, to be honest, it's so long ago now. Mm-hmm. It's been over a decade now at this point. And,
dude, I'm getting old too.
and, you know, so much has changed on the mm-hmm. campus. You know, I remember the first night that we were there, they had a freshman gym jam in the union, and it was there that I ran into a young lady that I met on a college tour of UNC Asheville. She was from Asheville, and she was on the college tour of UNC Asheville because I thought about applying there too, which I didn't, thank God. But I met her on that college tour, which was in 2009. And here we are in 2010 running into each other at the freshman gym jam at A&T.
And you remember, did she remember you?
Yeah, she remembered me. Yeah.
That's dope.
Yeah. And we became really good friends, you know, and so it was just freshman year was kind of just like those experiences, you know, just mm-hmm. having fun, enjoying life, you know, exploring. Now that doesn't take from the side. I messed up some, you know.
Oh yeah, how did you mess up? Because let's get real, because I got students that listen to my podcast, like
yeah. I'm gonna tell you, I messed up my freshman year, my first semester. You know, going out of high school and going into college, you think, hey, you know, I can do an 8 o'clock class, you know, because we went to, you know, we were at school at 7:30, you know, mm-hmm. in high school, and I was at school at 6 o'clock, you know, in elementary or whatever. You think you can do it, but being in college is a totally different ball game, and those 8 o'clock hit totally different when you just went to sleep at four.
Yeah.
And I had my freshman year, I had an 8 o'clock class the first semester. And let's just say it was by the grace of God and the grace of that professor that I passed the class when I probably honestly really shouldn't have, based off of the attendance policy, because I missed the class so much.
Dang.
So that was a lesson learned.
Of course. And 80% of the battle was showing up.
Yeah. And you know, it was a Monday, Wednesday, Friday class. And you know how many times you're allowed to miss that class, right? Before you're supposed to get a incomplete. I exceeded that number and then some.
You missed it that many times? That was terrible.
It was such a struggle for me. Such a struggle for me.
Did
one,
you go
because,
to bed that late? Like every night?
Yes. Yeah.
What were y'all doing?
So me personally, I am a night owl. So my energy does not really kick in until around 8 o'clock, 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night. So I can stay up to 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning and think nothing of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the way that the world works, everyone gets up and jobs start and classes start in the morning.
In the morning.
When I'm going to sleep.
You just wanted to be on your time. That's what that was the part of the rebellious thing. I just wanted to stay up. Because when
you sound just like my parents saying, you just wanted to be on your time.
Hey, there's a lot of truth to what our parents say, but like it just isn't filtered in the right manner, I think. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
for students' ears.
Yeah, and that's just kind of, you know, how I always. That's why, you know, my parents when I was younger, they forced me to go to bed, because
mm-hmm.
I would just be up, or depending on my mood, you would go to sleep. This was my issue as a young person, and I still kind of do it to this day. My parents, they could go to sleep and their entire house is completely rearranged.
Oh yeah, you got a problem. Boy, you need some melatonin. I'm surprised they didn't slip none of your food when you was younger.
You know, back then they weren't slipping melatonin like that, and they were more so Benadryl. But my parents, what they would do is my father would drive me in the car to help make me go to sleep when I was a baby.
Yeah,
that's what would happen. They would go to sleep sometimes, and they'd wake up, and like the entire downstairs is completely rearranged.
Oh man, I was
and that just kind of, you know, moved into as I got older, you know, mm-hmm. less of the, you know, moving furniture around and more of the just being up and not even necessarily. You know, of course, probably like watching TV. Back then, we didn't have cell phones, you know, but, you know, watching TV and like that, but not really doing, I guess you could say, not doing anything, just up, you know. And that's even to this day, I have to force myself, you know, to go to bed at a certain hour, because otherwise I won't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
That's my cautionary tale, actually, that I give to young people. is, you know, first of all, don't take an 8 o'clock class. That's what I say that off the jump. No apologies. Don't take 8 o'clock class. And then if you do, you know, make sure that you're being responsible, and you know, go to class.
go to all of the classes. See, the reason why I could talk like that is that I went to every one of my classes, and an 8 o'clock class was strategic for me. It wasn't I ain't gonna take this class because I'm asleep. I was like, this is a class that I need and want or whatever, and it fit my schedule. And like I had a whole bunch of stuff that I needed to do in the afternoon because we had basketball practice or games or whatever we had to do in the afternoon. I had organization meetings in the afternoon, so to get all of my classes done in the morning was perfect for me. Even when I had practice at 5 a.m., 6 a.m., I was like, I still gotta, I go home, I go back to the dorm and take a quick nap, a shower, quick nap, and be out the door, and in class, even if I was, still tired in the middle of class, and some of my notes, I was writing, and then it starts scrolling down the page, I mean, sometimes that happened, but I was there though, and I was sitting in the front row, so you
Oh,
can't,
wow.
yeah, I made sure that I was getting every experience that I had because,
Yeah, I needed that. I needed your do-right spirit because I didn't have a do-right spirit.
man, it only comes from like I'm always overlooked and underestimated, always. All my life I've been that way. So I was like, if you're gonna overlook me and underestimate me, I'm gonna do it the right way so that like you can't deny me when I do get what I get, you know what I mean? And you can say, oh, you didn't do this or you didn't do that. No, I hit all of the little check marks. So when I get there, either you're gonna give me that opportunity or I'm gonna take a different opportunity, and you ain't gonna eat off of my knowledge and my skills because I was there and I went through every and I use that like consistently to this day, like just showing up and being there and taking all the consequences even on a bad day. You had those bad days where like just work just be piling up and things get thrown at you and or you messed up on something and it's due or you procrastinated and it's past due now. I took all of those on the chin and I was just like, I'm gonna be here every day no matter what. Even if I have to take a blow to my ego or whatever, because I messed up. But even to this day, like I'm at work every day. I hate missing work because I know at some point in time I'm gonna be able to work for myself and I'm gonna be able to sign my own checks.
Most
And
definitely.
that's the goal, is to be able to sign my own checks. But I have to practice being there because you can get into that mode of sleeping in all you ain't gotta be nowhere, but you probably should be up doing something, you know what I mean? And I tell people this because I teach group fitness classes, and I was just talking to somebody yesterday about how many I used to do, like three class when I first started group fitness, like 10, 11 years ago. That first year, probably the middle of the first year, I started doing like three classes in a row. That's 3 straight hours. And then I would go play basketball. Nobody knew in the group fitness classes I would go downstairs and play basketball after. But everybody was calling me crazy. They like, oh, you crazy for doing three classes. How do you do that? This and that. I'm like, man, I mean, I'm here, so I like the class. I might as well do it. And I got goals, right? So I might as well go ahead and stay. And everybody calling me crazy, looking at me funny. And I mean, not funny, but but then other people started doing it, and then they realized that they could do it. And I say all that to say, I don't know where I was going with that, but oh yeah, you build up your like. So my goal was to play in a one basketball game a week, right? So I was like, if I can go for 3 hours and maintain a level of intensity for that whole 3 hours, I can play for 1 hour and give everything I got in that 1 hour. You know what I mean? That I could bring in the whole 3 hours stretched across some time. So even in class, when you when And this is for my students listening. When you're in class and you go to class every day, you're building up that muscle, that resilience muscle that is going to help you throughout life. Like just going and facing even if you didn't get a paper done or you missed an assignment, that's going to help you, that you go every day and the professor knows that you are there and you're trying, and that goes a long way. Even in the workplace, like your teammates and your supervisors, I don't call them bosses, but supervisors, they're going to respect that. And once they respect that, you become reliable and they can depend on you to be there. And that's almost priceless these days.
Most definitely. That's a good point that you made about even if you're not doing well, you being there will go a long way and will help you. Someone seeing you and seeing that you're putting in effort, even if you're not necessarily 100% successful in that effort, the fact that you're there will can carry a lot of weight.
It shows that you're trying at least. I have students, like I had this one student, all she needed to do was apply to the university or college that we go through our dual credit with, the community college. And she got so upset that she just like she wasn't reading the questions and answering them correctly. And that's all she was doing. I was like, are you reading the question? Because this says it's a yes or no question. You left it on no, but it's asking you a serious question. Do you have are you a US citizen type thing? You put no. And she just wanted to get up and leave. And I'm like, why are you leaving? Oh, it's frustrating me. I was like, I don't know if you should be in this class, but that was in my head. But it was like you quitting, and nobody wants to help somebody that quits, and just you not being in class is showing the professor that like you're not giving any effort. So why would I give effort to help you get a good grade in the class?
And that's why, I was so grateful to that professor, and it definitely was a lesson learned. It was like, okay, this is you can't do this, and you don't want to start a reputation in the department, in the building, in the university, that this is who you are, because things like that, people begin to assign that to your character, even if it's not, something that is necessarily a something that should be applied as a character flaw or something like that. But that's what we do as people. And you have to,
Actions speak louder than words, type of thing.
So yeah, it was a lesson learned. So all to everyone that all the students that are listening, don't do
Did you
that.
do it again? Like, or did you not schedule 8 o'clock classes?
I did not schedule 8 o'clock classes
Because you know yourself. And
because I knew
that's an
myself.
important thing with students and people, just people in general. Like, that's a self-assessment too. If you know some things about yourself, you have to kind of cater. You got to take into account what's required of you and who you are, and then you got to combine that to make a strategy. And
Absolutely.
that sounds like what you did. It was like, I know I'm not functioning right in an 8 o'clock class. I'm gonna just cut this out of my schedule until, if you had to, like for a major class that was only offered in the fall or something, you probably would have did it because you had to do it, right?
I would have done that, but being that I had options, not so much, and don't get me wrong, that's not to say that there were not other classes where I missed one or two, but I did not do that again, with the excessive
And you
number,
did get a
because
second chance because
I did.
the professor worked with you, and
She
then
did.
you made a correction in your life. Because, like, I'm always about giving a second chance, but if I'm having to give you second, third, fourth, fifth, like, you wasting my time.
And I think she kind of understood, you know, and that's not to, you know, put down, you know, my actions, but it was 8 o'clock in the morning and we were learning about world history prior to 1814. So it wasn't the most fantastic subject to talk about 8 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, that's terrible.
And bless the professor's heart. She was a little old lady. She's ever been in her 70s. Mm-hmm. And she would do her best to be energized and pump the students up and everyone would be half dead in the class. But, you know, when I was there,
I guess I had kind of like I had a different mindset going into, because I went to Iowa State University for my first year, and that was a huge, like, I didn't know what I was doing. It wasn't culture shock. It was it was kind of, I don't know what you mean by culture shock, but
the environment, like, just like, I mean, being in Iowa.
Oh yeah. Like I grew up like in the cornfields and stuff anyway. Oh, okay. So cornfields, white people. Yeah, I was already in that. But like the pure size of the school and not being one of the top dogs on campus. I mean, that didn't affect me, but like didn't nobody know me for real. So it was different, but the size of 50,000 students was different than I graduated with 150 or something.
Oh,
like that.
Wow. Most, you know, definitely. What I mean? Yeah.
And then just kind of seeing the politics and things that go on. And I was just like, I can't play this game because I just want to come to class and, you know, I want to talk to the professor. It's just too big. But then when I went to the school I graduated from, Missouri Valley College, it was smaller. I got that one-on-one attention, connection with the professors, and it just really worked for me. But I was disappointed in myself that I didn't do well at the other school and wasted a whole bunch of money. And so when I came into the next school, I went there with a different attitude. I was like, I gotta go, and you know, and I ain't trying to waste no more time. I gotta get everything out of this experience. I don't even really remember going to too many homecomings or anything like that. I still don't go to the homecomings because, like, I just ain't that type of social person. Mm-hmm. I don't like small talk, and you know, people still have that social hierarchy that they had in high school and college type stuff.
Yeah.
So I just don't deal with that. And, you know, if I get invited and a group of people want to go, I'll go. I went a couple of times, but then they don't be doing nothing. So then I have to find something to do. And then I ain't with the partying and all that. But, you know, so tell me about Jiho and how that came about. That's what I really wanted to get to. and tell me about the experience that you have when you go to Jiho. Or tell us what Jiho is, and then tell us that experience that one might have going to a HBCU, and particularly A&T.
Yeah, so, you know, A&T is the number one public HBCU in the country. And it is also the number one producer of African-American engineers in the world. And so, you know, having such a reputation, it kind of goes into with homecoming, which stands for, Jiho stands for Greatest Homecoming on Earth. And it is a term that was coined, I think, about 20-something years ago. And it's what we say, you know, it's like, are you going to Jiho? Well, you know, happy Jiho, happy Jiho. And it's very true in it being the greatest homecoming on earth, in that there is, it's like being in, imagine if just every Black person just came together and it was all love, food, laughter, great memories, just drinking, just flowing.
Mm-hmm.
That's homecoming. It's love. It's pride. It's Black excellence. All in one place. You know, and Auntie's homecoming is very special in that it is the second largest revenue stream of revenue for the city of Greensboro every year, with number one being the furniture market, because Greensboro is the sister city to High Point, which is the furniture market capital of the world. And it brings in millions of dollars in just literally not just in the it's homecoming is usually is a week long, mm-hmm. but the actual game, you know, and homecoming is that Saturday. And really just on that weekend, millions of dollars is spent in the city, and also of course throughout the week and stuff as well. So that's its significance to the city, you know. And then you have all your alums that come back, and even those that are more well known, like Terrence J and you know, Reverend Jesse Jackson, you know, those individuals that come back, you know, and then you even, you know, it's you have some other less notable Aggies, but are successful and made their mark at A&T, you know, and they come back, and it's great to see them. And then you also have, you know, some legendary individuals like Jesse Jackson, like I said, but we also mm-hmm. have a Miss A&T 1981 or 82, I want to say.
Who's that?
Sybil Lynch.
Okay.
Was Miss A&T. And if you know who Sybil Lynch is, Sybil Lynch is she sings gospel now, but she was an R&B singer. And she did the cover of Dionne Warwick's song "Don't Make Me Over."
Oh, okay.
Yes, she's Miss A&T 1982. So having individuals like that in your presence, you know, it's just it's amazing. And then you've got the food. Everybody and their mama is out there cooking. My parents will be out there this year. They're out there every year, and we tailgate with my grandfather's best friend, who they've been best friends since 1957. They were actually roommates at A&T, and his name is Mr. Van McDonald. And he is actually the reason why tailgating exists at homecoming or at the games, period. He was the first person to tailgate at a game. And to see it now, you would just it's just amazing. And when you talk about memories, particularly of the homecomings, I remember my freshman year.
During your birthday week.
My birthday week, right. We were at the game. And it was kind of dying down a little bit, and people were, you know, kind of just say, hey, y'all want some food or whatever. So we passed by this tent, and I had just being myself. I just called. I was like, ooh, that fish smell good. And they were like, you know, they were like, y'all want some? And we were like, yeah. So it's that type of kind of love. And we went over there. They fed us all that they had. We talked a little bit and came to find out one of the ladies that was there, she's from where my family's hometown is, which is Rayford, North Carolina. She's actually from Fayetteville. But her niece, if you remember Goldie from Flavor of Love,
mm-hmm.
that's her niece. And she's from Rayford as well. Goldie is from Rayford as well. And so, you know, that was just, as we were talking, that was something that, you know, was just kind of like, wow, you know, you never know who you're in the presence of.
Right.
And that's homecoming. It's love. It's just, it's food. It's a great time. And especially at A&T.
And I gotta get to one. Y'all gotta take me to one. I know a Aggie that connect me with the HBCU Ash Dr. Ashley and the HBCU Experience Movement. And I'm gonna have him take me when he go, because I gotta experience this, because I've never experienced one before. So this that could be like my introduction after the introduction to HBCU homecomings and ANT homecomings, because I mean, I think I no, that was the band, but shoot, I hear a lot of good things, and this is I done did the I think the second edition, either the first or second edition, of the HBCU Experience book with the Aggies, and they never really talked about it on the podcast. They never really talked about G-Ho. I was like, what is G-Ho when the first person said it?
Oh wow. I mean, homecoming is truly something that it's hard to explain. It can only really truly be experienced.
Right, okay.
And that's what it is. It's an experience. It really is an experience. And I would recommend that you rest up the week going into homecoming.
Okay.
And then when you get there, take your naps when you can.
Because it never stopped.
Because it never stops. It never
Oh,
stops. So, yeah. And it brings, I mean, Lord, it brings hundreds of thousands of people out.
man.
Yeah. So.
So, without going into all the way detail, give us another snippet of what you wrote in your chapter of the book, and what does success mean to you?
Wow. Okay. So it's actually kind of something that I touched on a little bit prior to was the discussion my family had with me about attending A&T. I would say the first part of my chapter is really about is centered around family and laying the foundation of the legacy part. But then I move into what I spoke about earlier about applying to other schools, because I recognize that this is probably where I'm going to go, but I still wanted to see what all my options are. You never want to just put all your eggs in one basket. I wanted to see what else was out there for me, even if I had kind of already made up my mind. And that's I would say that's another part of my chapter. And then yeah, I don't want to close it out, but yeah,
And
that's another
what?
part of my chapter. And then for me, success, for me, success is happiness. In not necessarily just not necessarily every facet of life, but I am healthy. I am emotionally stable, secure, mentally stable, secure. Financially, I am secure. Family's doing well. Friendships are going well. That's success for me. It's not all, what I can buy. And it also goes into really what I kind of speak about in the book is which is service. What impact did I make? I often say is when I speak of A&T, in particular when we've been doing these interviews, is that my name you won't find on a plaque or written down in a book saying that he did X, Y, and Z. But what you will know is I was there and I had a hand in it. And that's what success and leaving a legacy for me is. It's not necessarily your name being in the bright lights, but the fact that but your influence was there or is there. is success.
And that was all, that's all a part of it. And I hope y'all go get the book, help these Aggies be a bestseller.
Yeah.
The book is out today on Amazon. Go get it. And I appreciate you coming on again. I'm sorry we had to do it a second time, but I think it came out real clear. And you said you dropped them nuggets. You dropped them even harder than the first time.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So I'll get this edited up and probably in the morning be out, and I'll send you an email with the link and everything.
Awesome.
All right. Well, all thank right. y'all. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we'll be in touch soon, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
You're welcome. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Success is My Religion podcast. Again, partnering with the HBCU Experience Movement. Be on the lookout for the book, the North Carolina A&T State University 3rd edition. It's coming out on Amazon in the next month or so. So go get it when it comes out.